Okay, now let's say the dentist is listening to this. They're thinking to themselves, okay, yes, you know, this sounds like me. I think I need a consultant. So they take the step. They say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and hire a consultant.
Yep.
What will the consultant actually come in and do? And you know, how can that consultant really improve the practice?
Okay, well, we could probably spend hours talking about that, but let me just give you a few kind of ideas about how over the years I would approach a practice. If somebody says, all right, I want to hire a consultant, and what can a consultant do to improve the practice? Well, first of all, I mean, a consultant needs to review the history of the practice. You got to sort of say, well, where is this? You know, it's a static moment in time right now, but is the practice going up? Is it going down? Is it flat? You've got to be able to sort of get an idea of what is really happening in that practice. And then based on that, you're going to devise some 6, 12, and 24-month goals that should absolutely be written down at the start for reference and for measurement of performance, because in the end, the doctor's going to be able to see a return on his investment when he or she hires a consultant. I would usually expect that a practice could get about a 30% increase in practice collections within the first 12 to 15 months if, in fact, they were a busy practice.
Really? Let me stop you for a second. That sounds to me, that's extremely significant. A 30% increase within about a year, or just a little over a year? That's incredible.
Yeah, but again, this is in a practice that's busy.
Right.
Again, if you have a practice that has no patients in their schedule 2 days from now, then that is not somebody who would be able to apply a lot of the principles. That person certainly could be helped with some marketing ideas or this or that to be able to get them to a level. But I'm talking about a busy practice that, says, gee, either I'm at a crossroads or I have a situation and I'm going to hire this consultant. So,
right, but back up for a second. But the practice that's not that busy, the practice that does not have a full schedule 2 days down the road, but that type of practice still could benefit from a consultant, you're saying?
I don't think that kind of a practice can usually afford a consultant.
Oh, okay. But could they afford not to have one? That's kind of a double-edged sword there. It sounds like they may need one pretty badly.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times people call me and say that they want to work together, and when I do the analysis, I tell them that I don't think that they're really ready, but maybe 6 months from now you will. And so I'll maybe spend some time with them and say, okay, fine, I think I would suggest this or this or this, and why don't you work on that? And if, in fact, you can be successful with that, then you'd be able to get into a consulting program.
Okay, so in other words, here's some things I'm going to recommend. Do these things. I think they're going to get you busier. Then once you're busier, we can certainly help you.
That's right.
Okay.
See, because, I mean, some people, maybe they don't have a full staff, or they don't have a complement of patients. Again, when you're talking about efficiencies or to consolidate and to add staff, I mean, these people aren't in that position. So, you know, they have to sort of pay their dues, so to speak,
try
to work,
okay,
do whatever, maybe get a little bit of advice, maybe see somebody in their area who could be a mentor to them, maybe even another successful practice.
Maybe somebody that can help them with marketing, something like that.
Yeah, you know, just to be able to sort of get some way to have a direction.
Okay.
But we're talking about somebody who's maybe a little bit more advanced than that. And
the
consultant, again, should probably review the fee schedule. Sometimes I find that schedules are the fees are too low, or that the fees are all over the place. Some are high, some are low. And so you've got to be able to convince the dentist oftentimes that raising fees is just a mental hurdle that just has to be overcome. When you start with the practice, you need to be able to analyze the current profitability of the practice. You need to be able to have a benchmark of where you're starting from in order, again, to measure performance. Because it isn't necessarily what you're collecting, it's what you're keeping at the end of the day. And I find that most dentists that I've met really do not know how to use a profit and loss statement and how to interpret it and to use it as a business tool. I think a consultant needs to come in and be able to evaluate the staff. This is really big, because it's impossible to have a great practice without a great staff. And I operate on a premise that when I start with a new practice, you got to give everybody a reasonable amount of time to participate and get involved with the changes that you're recommending. But sometimes, you really have to make a difficult decision to possibly eventually let someone go or head in a new direction. And I think a consultant can be helpful here based on experience of interacting with hundreds of staff members. You sort of get a pretty good idea, Dave, of ability levels and team concepts and who can change. And it's really difficult for us to change, all of us.
I agree with you. I'll tell you, I think so many people, not just dentists, but so many people in other businesses and in their lives, they're afraid of change. And that is a tremendous obstacle right there.
It is, because the change really needs to become part of the DNA of the practice, mm-hmm. that it's okay to change.
Exactly.
And people need to welcome change. You've also, when you're working as a consultant, the consultant will review maybe the procedure mix of the practice. You know, what's actually happening there? What percentage of crown and bridge, cosmetic, operative? What procedures do you like to do? What would you like to do more of? And depending on the stage and the age and the maturity of the practice and the doctor, maybe you shouldn't be going and doing certain procedures like surgery or molar endo. And maybe you need to develop strategies to do more of the procedures that would give you energy. I oftentimes review continuing education plans going forward. I think that the knowledge from continuing education is key. And so depending on whether or not the consultant is a dentist, I think that that could be very helpful. I think that a consultant will be able to share experience and knowledge. I got to tell you, I know that I appear way smarter than I am. Because
I don't know. I think you're pretty smart. I don't know about that.
I'm in an unusual perspective of having the opportunity to interact, with hundreds of dental practices, many of which are extremely successful. So people listening to this tape shouldn't assume that you need to hire a consultant because you're on life support. I mean, many clients through the years have been quite successful, but they hire you to work on a particular area to get even better. You sort of find that a lot of people, they want to be the best, they want to get to a certain place, and so I find that I'm like a big sponge. I'm constantly soaking up a lot of good information, and it's that sum total of cumulative information that any consultant is going to acquire by working with different practices that will make it, cost effective to be able to hire somebody.
Mayor, it's funny because that Rich and I travel all over the country and we do our one-day seminars.
Which is a great seminar.
Thank you very much for the plug. But we speak to, we speak to a lot of dentists because they come up to us during lunch break and at the end of the day, and we have, we speak to a lot of them. And one thing that I noticed, kind of a commonality, is, and tell me if you agree with this, it seems like the most successful doctors are the ones that are the sponges, the ones that have mentors, the ones that learn from other doctors or other consultants, or they have a mentor that they listen to and they learn from. It's as opposed to the ones that just kind of keep to themselves, stay in their office all day and don't have these mentors. I mean, it seems to me there's such a difference. It's incredible.
Oh, there is. There really is. And it's so much more fun to work with these people who do want to be the best and who want to be able to advance and who want to provide a wonderful environment for their patients and for their staff.
Absolutely.
Those are the people who, you like to work with. And usually those are the kind of people who are calling you.
Rich and I, we've had mentors over the years, people that we've learned from, and without some of these people that we've been in touch with and learned from, we probably wouldn't be doing what we are doing today. And I imagine it's the same thing with you. I'm sure in your career, when you were in your clinical career, you probably had favorite mentors that you learned from all the time. I'd be willing to bet.
Oh, for sure. And those were the people that, you respected. I think that, dentists, they work in sort of a very small area. They work in their practice.
Yeah.
Maybe they have lunch with their buddies. every once in a while, the information they get usually is wrong. People are always exaggerating. Oh, yeah, I get 200 new patients.
Right, exactly.
I mean, who knows what you can believe? You really are sort of limited by the fact that you're practicing in sort of a confined area, maybe as just a single practitioner, maybe with a partner. And there's a lot of stuff going on out there that you don't really know about. And that's why I find that when I'm involved in a practice that I can bring that sum total of other experiences that honestly I didn't know. I'm usually learning every day because of the fact that I'm working with many successful practices.
You know, definitely.